case 7, which is United States versus Ronald Wayland, and we have Mr. Schultz.
May it please the court, counsel for the government, my name is Todd Schultz. I work as an assistant federal public defender, and I'm representing the appellant in this case. The district court committed clear error when it applied the sophisticated means enhancement to the defendant. The defendant did not use any especially complex or especially intricate offense conduct pertaining to the execution or concealment of this offense. In fact, the defendant's offense conduct didn't fool anyone and really wasn't capable of fooling anyone. He actually did the bare minimum to commit this fraud, and essentially much of the offense conduct was done in response to requests or demands that were made upon him by the Illinois Department of Rehabilitation Services, and I think it's worthwhile to highlight just a few instances of that offense conduct.
Judge Gilbert, who's been on the bench for a long time, said, if this isn't sophisticated means, what is?
I'm aware of that, Your Honor, and I think that I respectfully disagree with that assessment by the court, Your Honor. I think that it may be a novel approach to this fraud to create this fictional person,
Was there a real person named Cyril Strum?
There was, Your Honor. Apparently, he committed suicide in 1983, and the defendant was using his Social Security
number. How did he get the Social Security number?
That apparently has never been uncovered, Your Honor. That's not clear from the record.
That sounds pretty sophisticated to me.
Well, but my impression, Your Honor, is that frauds are often committed by people stealing someone's Social Security number and then using that security number in different fashions, whether it's to open up a bank account. And specifically, I believe that type of conduct is covered by 2B1.1B10, in that simply using the Social Security number in and of itself is not sophisticated means. At any rate, though, Your Honor, the Social Security card that he submitted was not very sophisticated. In fact, when Doors received it, the trial testimony from a employee at Doors was that it didn't look like any Social Security card that we've ever seen before. And so from the very beginning, apparently there was a red flag as to whether or not this is even legitimate. Several years later, Doors requested that the defendant submit verification that he was employed because they weren't going to be paying for services if he was, in fact, not away from the home. And in response to this, they had asked him to submit a check stub. He submitted what he described as a partial timesheet along with a letter explaining that he couldn't furnish a check stub because Deaconess Hospital didn't issue those. Now, this partial timesheet that he submitted had portions that were blacked out. It also contained portions that were crossed out. And when the witness from the Illinois Department of Rehabilitation Services was asked about it, she said, well, it's hard to tell exactly what this document is. And so, again, we have a document that clearly has some issues. It appears to be doctored, to be inaccurate, and, in fact, Doors takes the time to follow up with Deaconess Hospital and learns that, in fact, Deaconess Hospital uses direct deposit and each employee would have a check stub. So here they've caught the defendant in a blatant lie, yet remarkably nothing is done. There are no efforts taken to follow up on that. In 2005, as the fraud began to unravel, Doors informs the defendant, or Sturm, that they need updated identification. And it's at this point that the fraudulent driver's license and the fake ID from Gibson General Hospital are submitted to Doors. I believe it's worth noting that the driver's license was immediately recognized as being false by the Doors employee.
Didn't he file tax returns for many years on behalf of, I'm assuming no tax was due, but returns were filed.
Your Honor, it's
pretty elaborate.
Well, Your Honor, it's interesting because I don't believe that he filed them beginning in 1996. I think that he only filed them for 2002 and 2003. And I think that the filing of a fraudulent tax return in and of itself is not indicative of sophisticated means.
Well,
and so,
to keep anybody from sniffing around whether this Mr. Strom was actually a person.
Well, one of the things that's noted in the trial testimony is the fact that Sturm was way beyond the point at which he could begin to recover Social Security benefits, and he wasn't drawing on Social Security. And so, in fact, that sent off another red flag saying, wait a second, this guy's eligible for Social Security. Why isn't he, in fact, drawing it then? And so it seems to me, if, in fact, I'm correct, that there are only income tax returns submitted in 2002, 2003, and he's not drawing Social Security, it kind of seems like a haphazard plan that given the information that Doors had available to it, it seems like the conclusion would have been right off the bat that, in fact, this doesn't pass the smell test. And I think in the briefs, both parties, I believe, cite to the cases of Rettenberger, Allen, and Little, and I believe that those cases stand at least in part for the proposition that a higher level or a better brand of fraud is required for the sophisticated means enhancement to apply. And I think if you look at the unsophisticated, clearly fraudulent documents that the defendant submitted in this case, it does not rise to the level of sophisticated means. And I think it's important to keep in mind the simple fact that no one ever met or saw Cyril Sturm for almost a decade. And so it's not so much that the scheme here is so complicated and hard to unravel. It's just that for whatever reason, no one seriously looked at that. Because once the evidence was put on by the government at trial, it was obvious, the fraud was immediately obvious. I would briefly also like to address the fact that I don't believe there really were any efforts at concealment in this case. There was certainly no effort by the defendant to distance himself from this fictional character. As the court knows, he opened up a joint checking account with Sturm. He also opened a post office box. Neither of those two acts, however, make this a sophisticated means case. And in fact, Your Honor, he was receiving, I believe, for almost the entire period of this fraud, the paychecks to Cyril Sturm were being sent to the defendant's home. Surely that's not very sneaky. That's not the kind of conduct you would do if you were trying to conceal the fact that you fraudulently created this fictional character. On top of that, at some point, Doors goes to direct deposit, and to get direct deposit started, a check is submitted from this joint checking account. My understanding of the trial transcript is that the check is submitted, that it has Cyril Sturm's name on it, and that there's a blacked-out portion on the check covering up the defendant's name. I see that I'm into my rebuttal time, so if there's no questions, I'll give the government an opportunity to argue.
Mr. Carr.
Morning, Your Honors. Yesterday, before coming here, I talked to my 18-year-old daughter, Katie, told her that I was coming to the Court of Appeals to discuss sophisticated means, and she rolled her eyes as if, what would you know about anything sophisticated? I'm not saying that to be flippant. I don't need to know anything about it, because the standard here is what Judge Gilbert thought about it, and whether or not his finding was clearly erroneous. And the court is correct. Judge Gilbert's been on the bench for 16 years, and that's exactly what he said. If this wasn't sophisticated means of perpetrating a fraud, I don't know what is. That's after watching the trial for a day and a half. My understanding of the case law here, and you obviously know that way better than I do, is that it doesn't require a brilliant scheme. It's just one that displays a greater level of planning or concealment. Efforts at concealment, I guess, that go beyond that which would be inherent in the offense. And if you look at the entire record, which is what you have to do at this point in evaluating whether or not Judge Gilbert was clearly erroneous, you have to make a determination that his decision was a mistake. And you have to be firm in your conviction that it was a mistake. We start off with a fraud that lasted 9 years. That in and of itself, almost by definition, shows that there is more concealment going on here than what would be inherent in a regular fraud case. A regular fraud case, I would imagine, would be you would submit your biweekly timesheets saying that Cyril Sturm did this service and get paid. But for 9 years, there are still questions to be answered. Where is this guy? We need to meet him. Certainly, at the end, when things started to unravel and the residence was visited by the caseworkers and they saw how bad it was, they wanted to know exactly where he was and wanted to set up a meeting. The meeting was orchestrated, or was originally intended to be set up, through a letter. The letter was sent to Cyril Sturm and to Mr. Whalen. The letter goes to a post office box that, unknown to the agency, had been opened up jointly. So the letter goes there, and then there's no question but the intent is that these caseworkers wanted to meet Cyril Sturm. They said, show up personally, bring your IDs. The first letter, which is count one, comes in. And it is that my understanding is that my personal assistant, or my mother's personal assistant, went to your office and it was locked. Well, that was a lie, but he had to make up some kind of an excuse for why it is that he wasn't there. So I told him to put it into the lockbox out in front of your branch office. I thought that would be okay. Well, again, you know, these are efforts, and what's in there? You have to. There was a driver's license, and while counsel says that they immediately thought that it was fake, they still had to follow up. I mean, at that point, they thought Cyril Sturm did not exist. So they thought it was fake, all right, because they called and they made a determination that things just didn't match. The Gibson General Hospital ID was contained in that lockbox. They called Gibson General Hospital and found out there was no Cyril Sturm, and no Cyril Sturm that worked at Gibson General Hospital. So you've got a Gibson General Hospital ID. Michael Logan, the administrator from Gibson General, comes and he says, if I looked at that ID, it looks like it's legitimate, but if you work there and know it's not, he's taken from the website the logo and put it on there. He's put a photograph on there, but the logo is the wrong color. Sophisticated means. He had to pick out a hospital where this Cyril Sturm supposedly worked. He had to get the pictures. The pictures came off of a CD that was given to him by his cousin of pictures of the defendant's uncle during his lifetime. So he basically cropped those pictures from the CD and made these IDs. But that's not all. I think the court's kind of hit on some of this. First of all, you've got to get a Social Security number that works. You can't just make up that series of numbers, because it just won't come back right. The people that pay the salary, they report Social Security earnings. They report taxes. So he had to get one that worked, and not only one that worked, one where nobody'd complain about it if they found out that their benefits were skewed because of the fraud. So the court looked at the fact that you have not just the Social Security aspect of it, but the length and the scope and breadth of this. 9 years, $108,000 in payments, found in the search warrant were tax returns for 2 years. The tax returns, even for Cyril Sturm, even claimed an exemption for being legally blind. So we know that he had kind of all ends covered. And it really just it came unraveled when he could not produce in person Cyril Sturm. Not because of these IDs were so unsophisticated. And again, sophistication isn't the issue. It seems to me that the irony here is the defendant would have you believe that because this went on for 9 years, that somehow the agency was negligent, or the agency should have seen this. This agency administers this program to 30,000 people, and they're entitled to trust what people say. They're entitled to think that when you say that you've got somebody working for you, that in fact they are. And when they ask you to produce them, you don't send a letter that says you're harassing this person. And it's been very difficult to get this type of person for my mother, and I'm going to lose him because of the treatment. You don't prepare deposit slips from Deaconess Hospital. And by the way, the person, Sherry Armstrong from Deaconess Hospital, she said the defendant didn't work at Deaconess Hospital and those deposit slips were fake. He told the agency to get the benefit originally that he worked at Deaconess Hospital, because the agency makes a determination. They think if you live with your mom for a certain period of time, you provide some of those services, but the agency will kick in for time when you're either away at school or when you're involved with work. So he cooked up this Deaconess Hospital deal and I guess wants to lay on the fact that for 9 years that it went undetected. Why wouldn't the agency believe somebody? When I do my tax returns and I said and I staple each year and put in my file for the year all the charitable contributions that I make, people don't come and ask me about that. But if they did, it would be an enormous inconvenience if they did. And I'm sure that agency is trying to run its program that way too. So what we have here is a court that's made a finding of sophisticated means, based upon having watched a trial, based upon having looked at all of the little scams that the guy created to cover this up. He made that finding, and unless somebody can say that they're left with a definite and firm conviction that a mistake has been made, we respectfully submit that his finding should be upheld and his sentence in this case should be upheld. Thank you, Your Honor. If there are any questions, we'd be happy to answer them in the time that's remaining.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Schultz, anything further?
That the fraud in this case went on for about 9 years has nothing to do with the complexity involved. A review of the documents and the correspondence makes it blatantly obvious that there's some kind of deception going on. I point to the fact that no one even thought it important to meet with Cyril Sturm during the 9 years. And so I think we've talked briefly about Judge Gilbert saying that if this isn't sophisticated means, I don't know what is. But Judge Gilbert also said at the sentencing hearing that what troubled him more than anything was the fact that I think we have a failure by the state of Illinois. And I think that there is a failure on the part of the Department of Rehabilitation Services. That failure doesn't make what is a simple fraud into a sophisticated means case. And shortly before the trial, at a pretrial hearing, the government acknowledged to the court that before any investigation was undertaken in this case, employees from Doors were able to get onto the Internet and determine the true identity of Cyril Sturm. And I would submit to this court that if a fraud can be uncovered by a simple Google search, then that fraud is not employing sophisticated means, that most frauds you'd have to go far deeper into an investigation to uncover. And so I respectfully ask this court to reverse the district court's sentencing decision in this case, to remand for imposition of sentence without the application of sophisticated means enhancement.
Okay, thank you. This case will be taken under advisement. Proceed to...